Hello. Doing?
I'm fine. I am so happy that I get to speak with you about Altered.
Nice.
I am such an admirer of your work as it is, with Iron Sky and then 97 Minutes. Just love what you do. You think outside the box with your storytelling. And you
Thank you.
definitely go outside the box with Altered, exploring something that not too many people have looked at cinematically in a sci-fi sensibility. That idea of genetic inequality, human enhancements, the ethics of it. And I found that so fascinating. The way you bring this to life, we have kind of a divergent franchise feel for people that need some kind of context to relate to this. But we've got genetically enhanced humans. We have corrupt politicians and police. We have different sectors for different people. We have an underground for the specials. We have rich folks are the genetics. They've got the fancy schmancy, bright chrome and glass ivory towers. And it's the majority versus minority oppressiveness. And you really bring in this social commentary into science fiction with action. And I have to say, a superhero suit that is better than Iron Man's.
Wow, that is a that's a big, but yeah, I like that suit as well. It's a beautiful one.
The story in and of itself, before we even get into the production and your production values, where did the idea arise for this story of Altered?
Yeah, I think yeah, that's a good question. I think it really arises from kind of sensing really the world around where we live in, because we are right now doing quite a huge technological leaps when it comes to digital technology, artificial intelligence, and really the next thing on the horizon is the genetic enhancement, people are going to start experimenting on. And that was something that I really wanted to discuss, and especially the question which is like, who do we give the right to decide what is done to our genome, to our, to the most inner part of ourselves, to our DNA, and where can that lead? Like, if we give that power to the corporations and politicians and people like that, it's not gonna, it can turn into a very scary future. So that was something that I sort of wanted to discuss when I started to shape up the story, and then bit by bit it started to turn into a story where these underdogs, who are these outcasts who are never able to get those genetic enhancements, they decide to stand up and start fighting for them and their right to belong and their right to be treated equally as the rest of us. And that's how the story started to fold into places.
Well, and I have to say, your visuals complement this story so well in really positing the question for us to think about as we watch this film. We see the people with all the money. We see the genetically enhanced the genetically enhanced individuals and their, in their finery and they're dressed, and even the ones you've got the restaurant scene, and he's got kind of Vulcan ears, the nose is altered so much, but he looks so regal and so majestic that yes, he could be on a stamp or a poster child for that is who you want to aspire to. But on the other hand, you're as a normal person, you're looking and go, oh my God, that is really gross. He looks like he belongs in Star Trek on another planet. So you really make us think with what you are showing us that brings to life these themes that you are addressing. And I found that quite fascinating as I'm watching the film, because the worlds that you have created, you essentially have three different worlds happening here. You've got the world of the specials, it's the white shiny world, the genetics rather. Then you have the underground, where the specials live. us normal poor folk who can't afford genetic enhancements. The visual, and then the lab, Kessler's lab situation and setup. The looks are so visually distinctive. Your production design here is off the charts, Timo. I am so in love with the contrast that you create here.
It is, and you know what was the way that I really wanted to go with this movie, very specifically to get that look, was I decided that I don't want to start shooting and building all this into a studio, but I would love to find locations for this, because when you start building in the studio, things become a little bit artificial quite easily.
Yeah.
I really wanted to find locations that really complement the story. And I did find a city of Astana, which is basically like stepping into a science fiction set itself. So I was able to find all of that sort of crazy genetic, you know, architecture, very science fiction architecture, just around the corner from very dilapidated sort of ex-old Soviet brutalist, you know, suburban neighborhoods where I was, you know, old factory setups and stuff like that that were over there, and I was able to found both of these and sort of connect them and in that way create a look that kind of, I feel that it feels a bit more real, that it could, you know, it's tangible when it actually is in real locations and setups. And again, like in Astana, those interior locations can also be just absolutely crazy, like these presidential palaces and everything like that with all those shiny white surfaces and everything. It's just like quite something, like I've never seen anything before like that. But yeah, that was an important thing, to really try to bring it to feel a little bit real in the world, not just to build it all on a CG or on sets, but actually to have a real structures around there.
Yeah, it's very tangible as you're looking at this.
Yeah.
But I want to know who keeps buildings that white, because I want to hire them to come clean my condo.
Yeah, I know. It would be, you would have to go to Kazakhstan, and I know you can tell that they are very, very specific that when it's a certain space. I mean, they are very, very proud of that architecture. It's some very beautiful, very, very beautiful.
Yeah, that's it's easy to see by the care that they take with it. But this just works so well for you. But then you get into, and I think where it really stands out, is the actual set dress within the production design for the underground, the specials, where they live, with the tents and all of the mishmashing and the marketplace where Leon is you know, doing some of his biohacking business, which that whole idea of biohacking is just fascinating. But it is so immersive and so tactile and so visceral that you're just, I was enthralled by it.
Yeah, it was our production designer, Mitya, was just, you know, he worked tirelessly to create those environments. And I remember when I first walked into the set and I was like, wow, this is like, I got sucked into the world of Altered, like for the first time, like for real. I was just walking around and admiring all the craziness that he was putting there. And there's so many little details that you can look into. It's like, what amazing little idea that is. And then the big things. And yeah, it was a pleasure to work with a great, inspired production designer. That's a very, very nice.
Oh my God. And then you look at Leon's lab in that warehouse. Wow.
That is, it's a fun place. It was actually some kind of an ironwork, like an actual ironwork factory, like they did like gates and stuff like that. So a lot of like heavy iron machinery and that kind of a wear and tear that you can see everywhere. And then when the production designer started to really dress that set and really make it, bring it out to light, it turned into a quite an important character, almost like.
Yes, very much so, especially in Leon's invention stage. After deciding he's throwing in the towel, I don't care about anything, I don't care about anyone, but then he gets inspired. The ironworks inspires him. And I got to say, and Anton's cinematography with the light coming through the upper windows, which is that's just standard across the world, I think, with factory type buildings and warehouses. That it's like almost the light from God shining down to give him an inspiration. And a very powerful moment, Timo.
Thank you very much. And yeah, like I said, like with a great team, we were able to achieve that. And I was very happy to work with Mitya, who was the production designer, and also Anton, who did that. Anton Bakarski, who was the DOP, who was just instrumental in able to capture that real vibe of the world.
Oh, talk to me about working with Anton. I am a big admirer of Anton's work. He's got great pedigree as a camera operator. You know, going back to London Has Fallen, Hurricane Heist, a couple of the Expendables movie. And if that doesn't give you a good training ground for lighting and lensing, I don't know what does. Mm-hmm. And Air Force One Down that he did for my friend James Bamford. Beautiful job. So Anton, he really shines. So how did you come up with the visual grammar?
I think with Anton, it all started from, I think he did really good, laid down like a color palette, which we followed quite clearly. He had this very clear idea, this is the world, and it's going to be based on these colors, this is the world based on these colors, and, you know, let's not let them get mixed, because we really want to separate these worlds and these colors. And Anton is great because, like you said, he's got the mileage of like really the experience under his belt over having worked on so many big projects as an operator and as a DOP on a huge amount of projects as well. And he really knows you know, he's a calm guy. I'm very, very different kind of person. I'm a very excitable, very loud, very running around the set like a crazy person. He's a calm guy. He says, Timo, take it easy. Yes, we're going to do it like this. And then then I go like a million miles an hour explaining what I want. And he's like, yep, I got it, no problem. And then, you know, he's fast, and then the image just works. And get it only through experience and great talent. And that was really nice work with him.
Well, something that I love with the camera work, with the visual design that you have, is that so much of this we are seeing at Leon's eye level, with Leon being in a wheelchair. That I find interesting, because rather than taking us out of his POV, we are in his POV. Like Chloe will bend down towards him, so her face is closer to his when they're talking. And then when others around him, we get some nice dutching upwards from his POV up, and also a little wider frame with other people, other specials around him. But I really appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, when we get into the presidential palace and Kessler, all of that, it's grandeur. You're like a fly on the ceiling looking down, like the world could come crashing beneath you. Absolutely stunning differentials from a camera POV. And I really love how it all comes together.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that we had a good discussion with the DOP. And the POV is very important of this movie, because we're always with this movie begins from the dirt and from the ground level. The people are really struggling to get by on their daily lives. Always having to look up, and that's kind of the story of Leon, when he's like, when he really, you know, you can feel that he, you know, they're all pushed to the ground, and to stand up from that position is challenging, but it can be done if you have the willpower in there. So that's definitely something.
So you got to talk to me about the suit. You got to talk to me about designing Leon's suit. How much was practical? How much was VFX?
Oh yeah, I mean it was a long journey. I think we started that almost like at the same time as we really started casting people, because we knew that this is going to be a long journey. And we did a lot of different kind of things. We tried version where it was more kind of a flower, almost like a very, very almost like a flower kind of thing. And then we tried something that it was very, very metallic and it maybe even more closer to something else. But then what I really wanted to have with that was that I really wanted to feel like it's something that you could cobble together. Not everybody, but somebody who knows what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That it's, you know, you can kind of Frankenstein it up together from different kind of bits and pieces, bobs and elements that are sort of floating around in your workspace. And that it kind of, that it works. And we try to create that as much as real as possible. Of course, there's a couple of elements in there which you couldn't do, but all the things with the lights and all that kind of thing, we really believed in a very practical approach in this movie, because that made everything feel a little bit more real and tangible and to the ground. So even that costume itself, it's the weapons that he uses, that's when the CGI kicks in, but the costume itself is pretty much just tediously crafted thing, and it was also, I have to say, like, to the Svetlana, who's the costume designer, she does a wonderful job in a sense that that costume is thrown around all over the place all the time, being kicked around, jumped on, smashed in, fallen down, by stunts, by Tom and stunts, and some weird reason, and I know that they did work a lot on that, some weird reason, it never broke down. And I was like, it just did not break down. Like, they had to fix it bits and pieces, but the main structure stayed. So it was very well made costume also, in addition for looking good. Like, it was a sturdy one.
That is amazing. So, and you didn't have backups built. So it's a good thing that this was sturdy. Or did you have some backups?
We had backup masks, because we knew that the masks are going to be a tricky one. Because somehow we thought that, and even the mask, I think eventually we did break one of the masks broke down. But everything else, it was just there. And then just the costume people were always like, and I say, and cut. There are like 5-6 people running there, gluing it together, putting little bits and pieces together, so that it can take another beating. And then after the shooting day, it was always taken to the costume department. They really like worked on it to make it survive another day. And I was like, this is like, what if this breaks? Like, let's hope it doesn't, because we don't have a lot of options to fix it after that. But somehow it didn't.
I just think it's beautiful. I just am in love with that costume. But one of the interesting things that you do with the costume, you then give it some very organic elements. We get the Chloe with her biological studies that she does. We get some great like butterfly effects in there and flitting and floating and really cool organic effects. Was that part of the original design, or did that come later?
No, that was definitely something that I always had. But I wanted to make this world, I call it the biopunk kind of a world, where instead of filling every corner with digital technology, I wanted to bring that the nature is sort of present there. There is like a biological experiments going on in both good and bad worlds, sides of the world, and that people sort of live a little bit more through that kind of technology instead of the digital technology. There's no cell phones, there's no, there's not that much of a digital technology. It's more biotech that is there. And wanted to also bring that present in the costume and the costumes, and also in the world and the design that we have, like growth, greenery growth,
mm-hmm.
and flora kind of energy sources and elements like that. And I think that brought it into an interesting territory where not so many science fiction films have lately gone. And I think it was something that I found very inspiring also for me.
Yeah, you're so right, Timo, because so many sci-fi films, they go with the technology, the tech, the AI, they don't look at the biology and the botany, because when the world is destroyed, it's the flora and fauna that comes back first. So nature finds a way to borrow from from Jurassic Park and Jeff Goldblum.
And you know what was my key to the whole world was when I was thinking about this world, I went down into this weird rabbit holes about reading about this and that. And one of the things that brought to me was a sunflower. And I started to read about sunflowers. And you know what I learned about sunflowers is that they are able to consume small amounts of radiation. And that was something that I started to think that imagine there is something like a plant that can consume radiation,
Wow.
can become an energy source of its own in that sense. And that was something that really started to open up that world. Like, okay, if this is the kind of a world in the future, how would that seem and how would they use that kind of a power? And that's how we created the Genesis tree and the Genesis flower and all that, which play obviously a part in there.
Oh my God, that's fascinating. And this is why kids need to pay attention in science class and learn about biology and botany. So
Exactly, yeah.
you have given them a reason to get educated in school. Now,
I hope so.
I have to
That's
ask
great.
you about your editing because you are taking
Yep.
us through these different scenarios. You've got action in there, you have some very human moments happening. I love the development of Mira, the character of Mira. How challenging was the editing process on this to keep the tension going with what's happening with this quote unquote revolution and to show the humanity that is permeating beyond this genetic human enhancement that's happening?
Yeah, I think editing was, I think, a very challenging process in this one. The order of the scenes and sort of the order of the story was a little bit different when the first edit happened. It actually was quite a bit different, and we were all kind of scratching our head. It's like that the pacing didn't work then. It felt like a little bit something was off, and I worked with my editor, quite a heavily trying to sort of like everything, the pieces were there, the scenes were working very nice and characters, but somehow the flow was a bit weird. But then we realized that if we take, a big chunk and we kind of flip it around and spread the story a little bit differently instead of force feeding it all in the beginning, because that's, I think many times science fiction have a little bit of a problem is you introduce a crazy world, then you kind of have to force feed it to the audience right away that they understand all the nuances of the world and everything because it's a different kind of a world. And that can sometimes become quite hard to get into a science fiction story. So instead, we decided that, okay, you know what? Let's trust the audience. The audience is, we are very clever people nowadays. We've watched all kind of science fiction stories, read all the stories. We don't need to be, dragged through all the motions about like how this world became what it is and what it is like. We need a little bit of something to set going, and then let's focus on the characters, only on the characters, build the characters and their relationships, and then bring in the little tidbits about the story and the world when needed, when there's a good moment for that. And that sort of solved that route, because then it started to feel like, okay, now we're talking, now it's a movie, now there's a characters that are driving the story, not the story driving the characters. So, it's like it doesn't feel like somebody's forcing you down some road, but it actually is like you get to know the characters and then you, but it was a bit of a challenge, and obviously finding that, but also like with a lot of action and with a lot of different kind of things, and also the fact that there is a visual effects in there quite a bit, and then having of course edited all without the visual effects and sort of thinking of in my head like it's going to be approximately that, but then when you really get the visual effects in place, it kind of becomes a little bit different animal again, and you're like, okay, now I gotta move these things around and this kind of thing, and this works and this needs a little bit, and all these things just it is with the science fiction stories. It's not as straightforward creating that because you kind of have to serve quite a many masters as you build that story.
Well, you've done a wonderful job serving those masters. Now, I've saved the best for last, your casting, Timo. This film is coming out at a perfect time right now with the Tom Felton renaissance with him on Broadway.
Yes.
So everybody's talking about Tom Felton. But the beautiful thing is that with Altered coming out as well, this is a Tom Felton we have not seen before. And I've seen so many of his films that he has done that are not Harry Potter. But I've never seen him stretch and develop a character to this point. He is mesmerizing as Leon. Talk to me about finding Tom and then building this cast around him.
I do agree with you. I think that was to me, like he carries on his shoulders and creates a character that is the one that pulls you into the world and introduces the world. You see everything through his eyes. Tom is a great guy because that guy has been acting since, I don't know when, how old, he must have been very young when he started on Harry Potter.
Yeah.
This is the life that he's been working on. And you can see it on him. I mean, he's a young man still, but like the amount of experience that he has and the charisma that he, like, it's impossible to replicate. And he comes in and he really pushes the character. He is very, very, especially with this character, he was very interested. He believed in Leon just as much as I did believe in Leon. And we had, you know, endless long conversations on discussing it and developing it and going inside Leon's head and you know, really, really wondering. And then on the day, on the set, like, he becomes that character and it's not just that, he's also a fantastic person to work with. So he, you know, it's whether on screen or off screen, like, you always get this feeling like, he really cares about the craft he is working on and that he has always been working on basically all of his life. And that's, it's a joy. For me, it was quite clear from the beginning that I want to work with specifically Tom Felton. I knew his range of, you know, his power as an actor. I knew how, you know, very, very talented he is. And I know that he brings that character, you know, the heart and the humor.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not always it. To me, it always was important with Altered and basically all the films that I make. Like, not to, you know, there needs to be levity in there. There cannot be too, like, you know, there needs to be humor in there, especially when we're talking of such dark topics as genetic alterations and sort of like dividing people into two different, you know, basically castes and everything. This is the thing where you know, that you really need to have that connecting humor, because that's when people start to listen to when they see that the story doesn't take itself, you know, it takes itself seriously, but it allows also, because it, you know, our world is, however dark life things are, there's always a bit of humor in there, and trying to find that and live on that is important for me. So director, and then Tom was the right person to bring that on the set.
I mean, he just blew me away, and it is. I can't say it enough. I've never seen anything like this from Tom before. This really is a whole new level for him.
I do think that it is a very different kind of a role he's done, and I think he nails it. He aces it.
But then you also have your supporting players around him, primarily Lizaveta Bugalova as Chloe, and Aggie Adams as Mira. And then in the third act, we get Richard Brake in there as Kessler. He's a scary dude. So you cast him so well, you don't need to be big and large and hulking to scare the bejeebus out of somebody. All you need is one look at Richard Brake's face. That's it.
I know Richard Brake is he turns in front of, but again, the scarier the villain, the nicer the person on the other side. Like, I can't tell you how nice that guy is. Like, he is a gentleman. He is patient, he is funny, he is, you know, of course, prepared and fantastic. And then, you know, you wouldn't believe it that when he turns the camera on, you're like, you want to take 5 steps back because he can be really scary on camera. Turn it off, and he's the nicest guy. He comes to you, he's like, was that good? Do you think, you know, what you liked it? And here we go. And then he brings in his sort of stare and his creepy smile, and like he just knows how to use his body as an instrument for the acting, and just great guy to work with also.
And he's a perfect counter to Tom's Leon.
Yeah.
In performance, yeah, and in look. They both have intensity.
Yeah.
But we have malevolence and benevolence. And it's beautiful to see. Chloe, the character of Chloe, Liza's performance as Chloe, really well done. I really like that character. Same as with Aggie as Mira.
Yeah. I think Chloe was, to me, the biggest worry about this whole movie was, am I going to make Leon and Chloe work together? Like, do I find the cast that have the right kind of chemistry? Because if you don't have the chemistry, then, you know, that's the beating heart of the whole movie, these two people and their chemistry together. So I was so relieved when on the day when we came to the first time they got to meet on a table reading session, and I was like, okay, so here we go. Let's see how this starts to work. And the second they met each other, the second that chemistry was like, born, and they became the best buddies. That they went through the whole film, you know, it was a long, grueling filming process. They went through the whole filming process, like really supporting each other in a way that I've never seen it, you know, before. Like a really, I thought that I couldn't believe that they haven't known each other for 20, you know, 10 years or whatever. Like there was just something. And I think it has a lot to do also with the fact that Tom, coming from being a child actor in his early days of his career, knows how to work with, of course you need to have a very talented actor, but knows also how to create a comfortable ground for a child actor, because Lizzie was whatever 13 or like very, very young when we filmed this one. And it can be intimidating if you think about 100, 200, 300 people shouting, going around, very tight schedules, you know, radios speaking here and there. But Tom was always making sure that Lizzie was comfortable, and Lizzie knew, you know, Lizzie had a good place to be when she started to build a role. And I think that was another great thing to watch from Tom, is like to see how much he cared that Lizzie was in a comfortable place when playing the role. And I think that's just a great thing to see.
But then you also give us Aggie's performance as Mira. And here again, Leon and Mira, this is a totally different relationship and dynamic that we've seen from Tom. You know, this one has a romantic kind of bent to it. And we never see him go after a girl, get the girl.
Yeah.
And here we're seeing this aspect.
Yeah, and I'm like, I was like, that chemistry, that story, like that romance over there. It's like, I love building that, and I think, and with Aggie and Tom, it's like, they were careful. I mean, they were very careful about like many things. It's like when is the right time that they're, you know, relationship advances from here to this point, you know, maybe there's a kiss and all that. And we had a lot of discussions and sort of trying to figure out what's the right moment, because if you do it the wrong moment, kind of spoils the whole thing. So you got to be careful with that. But Aggie was funny. I think she also loved very much being able to play this Mira, this kind of outlandish sort of sing, you know, what do you call it, pop star kind of a thing, and she, you know, she had a lot of fun rehearsing the sort of the dances and all that song stuff and everything. So she really brought in this kind of a very, very fun energy to the set and to the thing, and humor also. I mean, she is a very, very funny actress, and has a good humor, you know, sense of humor when it comes into developing these things.
Well, see, and that's another element that you have here. You have music and dancing and performance
Yes.
on top of everything else. You loaded yourself up, Timo.
I did sometimes, when I was doing another day, it's like, what are we doing today? Oh, today is the dance musical performance day, and then the next day there's this big fight scene. There's like it can start to feel really overwhelming because, like, as you know, shooting period is very, very limited. You only
Yeah.
have certain amount of days, and you better, if you don't get it, you don't get it, you don't have it on the screen. And then you're like, every day you have to be like, it's a whole different challenge every day. It's not like you're doing one long scene day after day. It's like a whole different, well, okay, today car chase, okay, today this, today a musical performance, today this and that. And it's like, so sometimes I was just saying, I was like, okay, this is a I put myself into this mess. I better sort it out. But like sometimes it felt really overwhelming. And then you add on top of that like a communication, people talking in seven, eight, nine different languages, and like it can get exhausting. But then in a weird way, your head is in the game, and you're like, this is there's no option. I will, get this, I want this, and I will get it, and will work my ass to
Well,
get it done. But yeah, it can be quite a big job.
I'm so glad that you did work your ass off to get it done. You have so much packed into this film, your social commentary, ethics questions, science, the importance of nature, classes, distinctions. It's just amazing. And we get music and dancing and lots of action in a really cool suit. You've got it all in here, Timo. So
Yep, there's a
now that we're getting ready for everybody to get to see Altered, as you look back on the process, is there anything that you learned about yourself as a filmmaker in making this film, this specific film of Altered, that you can take forward into future work now?
Yes. I think I learned that I really, it's a lot of trust that goes into making a movie, and like when the film is on the paper in front of you, it's all yours. But when you start building that together with the team, you start to spread that to so many people, and sometimes giving the trust can be the hardest thing is like whether it's the actors or whether it's the production designer or whether it's the camera. It's like, because the thing is, I cannot do everything by myself, and I definitely shouldn't even try. Sometimes giving that trust can be exhausting process. I mean, can be scary thing. And I think what I learned from this is to trust a little bit more on the professionalism of the people that I work with, that if I choose the right people to work with, they know what they're doing, and I can rely on them and I can trust on them. And it's a long process, and it will take many, many years, obviously, probably my whole career, to sort of just trust, trust, trust. But also, you have to be, as a director, know exactly what it is you want, and then how to communicate that, and then at the same time, trust the people. That is a trick. And I learned quite an important set of lessons on this one in that regards. But at the same time, I don't say that I'm nowhere near, finished. My craft is nowhere near finished. It is a learning process. And also the other thing is, every film is a different beast. You
Sure.
can't really say that, I learned this and now I can take it everywhere. It is Then the next, the challenges are just there. But I think that's that. And then the other thing which is important is, stay cool, stay calm. Everybody, we'll get it. We'll get it. Like, okay, the sun is going down. Okay, the guys are closing this location. We gotta just stay calm. Getting freaked out doesn't help. Just stay calm. Shoot what you need to shoot, and then get out of there. You'll be happy.
Well, I'm happy with what you did. I can't wait to see what you're bringing us next. I think you have, what, a movie with Andy Garcia coming next?
That's a tricky one, and that is something that is in the process. There is a couple of films that I'm working on right now, but one of the things I do want to mention is called Deep Red, which is a science fiction action thing trilogy, which we're starting, so you can check something about that. And then, of course, the question is, what about Altered, the future of Altered? I really enjoyed and loved building that world. Those characters, they live in my head all the time. Can't stop thinking about the stories I can tell in that world. So I am, you know, big dream would be able to, you know, revisit, you know, jump back into the game and in the world of Altered and you know, continue the story of Chloe and Leo, because I believe there's a lot to be said in that world.
I mean, I would love a sequel for Altered, because there is so much to tell. You can go in so many different directions.
What I love about the world is it is a kind of a 360 world. It's not just the world that's made for execution of the script, but there is a lot to be explored over there. And I do hope that there is a world where I can continue that story.
I would love to see a sequel just so you can incorporate more of the science about the genetic enhancements and DNA splicing and things along that, because that is so fascinating and it's untapped in cinema.
I really think that there's a fantastic world and stories to be told with that kind of element. So let's cross the fingers and hope we'll get to work on the sequel. I'd love to.
I'm crossing my fingers and my toes. And if you had come up with genetic altering and enhancement, I would ask for 6 toes and 6 fingers so I could cross even more for you. So.
That's well said. Thank you.
Timo, this has been so wonderful getting to talk with you today. Thank you so much for taking the time. And I hope we get to chat again in the future.
Absolutely. I had the greatest time chatting with you. Thank you so much for this. We'll continue down these chats in the future project. Definitely.
Yes, we will. Timo, thank you.